This week on This American Life, imagine if that's how you felt about your job and that this guy was your boss.
Today I don't feel like riding any rides.
This, by the way, is a staff meeting.
I just want to play all the games.
We go behind the scenes at an amusement park and meet the guy singing this song who is possibly better suited for his job than anyone I have ever met this week.
This American Life, tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
The Trump administration has made it clear it will target broadcasters it deems critical of the president.
So if a national programmer wants to run a particular show or doesn't want to run particular programming, the local TV station has the right to preempt and to push back and make a different decision.
Now the FCC is going a step further and threatening to revoke broadcast licenses for 8 local ABC stations. We'll talk about it on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is filmmaker and Milanville, Pennsylvania resident Josh Fox, whose latest film, The Welcome Table, has recently been released by HBO. Back in May of 2008, Josh was visiting his parents, who received a request from a fossil fuel company for permission to lease their land for the exploration of natural gas. The process used in this exploration was hydraulic fracturing, known today as fracking. Before anything was signed, Josh decided to find out more about this and went out into the country by himself to talk to people who had leased their land and find out how it had turned out for them. Thus started the epic journey of the Gasland trilogy: Gasland, Gasland 2, and How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things That Climate Can't Change. All of these films can be found on joshfoxfilm.com, but most importantly on Josh's Substack, joshfoxfilm@substack.com. I hope I got that right. Before we talk about The Welcome Table, we're going to start at the beginning, the making of Gasland. Here's my conversation with Josh Fox. Welcome back to Catskill Character, Josh. I'm so happy to have you with me today.
I'm so happy to be here, Donna. Thank you.
You know, since there are probably people who might not know the history of what came before the Welcome Table, I want to talk about that because we can never stop being activists and building community and indeed welcoming. So let's start with Gasland, Josh.
Well, I think I should talk about it in the context of the Delaware River Basin, right? So in 2008, I had actually been going door to door, knocking doors for Barack Obama all across the region. And I kept hearing about gas drilling. And then in May of 2008, a group of people who started to call themselves the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability held this big group meeting at the Delaware Youth Center. And I turned up because I got a little bit nervous about this. And I figured, you know, there maybe be 10 people showed up, you know. When I got there, there was 500 people. And Barbara Arundel and Joe Levine and Pat Carullo gave a presentation about this little known thing called fracking. And I was horrified. I saw, you know, water despoiled. I saw places in Pennsylvania ripped apart. I saw places in Wyoming ripped apart. And I got home and I couldn't sleep for like 3 weeks. And I realized I had to do something. I'd never made a documentary before, but I had made a feature film. And I started to do this investigation because I wanted to help Barbara. And a couple of months later, she called me back. She goes, "Where's the video you're going to make of my presentation?" I said, "Look, this project has gotten a little bit more, you know, deep." And that became this cross-country documentary investigating the impacts of fracking. In 2008 and 2009, we showed it at the Delaware Youth Center. We showed it at the Tustin Theater. We showed it on the side of the river in Narrowsburg at the gazebo to educate the public about what the oil industry and the gas industry were doing and basically how they were lying to everybody. They were saying, "Oh, it's just a fire hydrant in the middle of your field. It's never, you're never going to know we're here." Meanwhile, this is a total industrialization of the region, water contamination, air pollution, health problems, a complete overthrow of everything that a beautiful area like the Delaware River Basin is. And that film made fracking a household word. There were a lot of pockets of people across the country in 35 states or so that were fighting against it in their local areas, but they weren't connected. And the film led to a huge amount of awareness. It premiered at Sundance. It won the special jury prize there. It was nominated for the Oscar for Best Documentary. It won the Best Directing Emmy. It was seen in 30 countries worldwide by hundreds of millions of people. And that really helped galvanize this fledgling movement against fracking. And then I went on tour with the movie to 500 different cities. And town by town, we left anti-fracking organizations, or fracking organizations got more and more people. And that became our movement. And we did the impossible. We were told that we were never going to beat the oil industry. Well, it turns out that people who are organized and want to defend their home from one of the most rapacious and dishonest and polluting industries in the world can actually beat them back. And that film then put me in the position of being an environmental spokesperson across the world. And it's something I've had a great honor to be and an obligation to be. But the film was really never designed to be a partisan tool. It was about people. You know, and I never asked anybody what their politics were. I'm sure that when I went to Dimmick in Pennsylvania and Wyoming, a lot of those people were, you know, from all the different stripes of political affiliations, from progressives to Republicans. But everybody cared about their children. Everybody cared about their health. Everybody cared about their environment. And I think I was a little bit naive that that would somehow bring people together. But then what happened was the oil industry came in and they created this huge smear campaign against me and the film. And it really fed into that whole partisan divide that's happening in America. And even now it is worse. Our community, which was very, very deeply divided, there were a lot of people who wanted to frack, who wanted the money. They were willing to believe the oil industry. And then there were a lot of people who were against it. And, you know, we won. Just recently, we faced a real threat where Scott Perry, a Republican congressman, tried to sneak in a little amendment to a bill that would have made the DRBC ineffective, make rules, and it would have overturned the fracking ban. So that activist spine that's in the region, it's a fundamental part of the history of our region now, rose up. I put out a video, got 60,000 views or something, and Delaware Riverkeeper Network put out their advisories and Damascus Citizens, and we had thousands of calls going to Congress in the matter of 3 days. We only had 3 days' notice. And we got the amendment taken out, and we won again. So that activist spine, that incredible community that fights against fracking in the Delaware River Basin, has never gone away, and we always have to remember it is with us, and it is a fundamental part of our history.
Well, thank you for that. I'm going to play a clip, Josh, from our first conversation back in 2021. I had asked you how you keep it together, how you keep going when you've seen...
keep it together.
What did I say before? Well, you do keep it together. And this was the response that you gave me.
I mean, I go back to a saying of Sandra Steingraber, what we love, we must protect. I think fundamental to our human experience is love. And if we shut out love, we lose our sense.
I wanted to share that clip, Josh, because it seems to me that since that time, rather than get discouraged and give up, you've doubled down on the love. Would you agree with that?
I think that when you find something worth exploring, it's usually an exploration that takes decades. You know, there are artists who have worked on the same kinds of questions for their whole careers. And for me, that film Gasland opened up this amazing new element in my artwork. I had been a theater director and a film director, but I'd never made a documentary. And this opened up a whole new element to what I was doing. And these projects were important. So. Yeah. You know, I continue to make films in that way about the environment and about climate change and about the oil industry and about injustice. Gasland 2, How to Let Go of the World and Love All the Things Climate Can't Change. All of those were on HBO. And then the film about Standing Rock, Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock, which was on Netflix. A film that I had made a couple of years ago called The Edge of Nature about COVID and long COVID. And now The Welcome Table, it's really one long arc. So you could binge watch them all.
Yeah.
and you see that progression.
Now, just to be clear, talking about love, not a private, romantic emotion, but as a political, spiritual, and communal force. You describe love almost as an act of resistance. What do you mean by that, especially at a time when our culture is often rewarding outrage and division?
Dr. Cornel West defines justice as what love looks like in public. And I think that justice is the concern of drama. Love is the concern of comedy, right? We have two different forms. Justice is what love looks like in public. I love that definition. I mean, I think of love as a verb. I think of love as something that is active. I don't think of it as a feeling. So strange. I have right in front of me this book I love called All About Love by Bell Hooks. She talks about Eric Fromm saying, quote, love is as love does. Love is an act of will, namely both an intention and an action, which also implies choice. We do not have to love. we choose to love. I love that because I think what motivated Gasland and those films and that activism at that moment was the great love of our home, the Delaware River, and the great love of the beauty of the planet. And I think that love also motivates climate action. We're seeing the world on fire. We're seeing floods. We're seeing famine. We're seeing some of the worst climate impacts that we could imagine, and they're only going to get worse. Love has to bind us together, and that is a choice. That is an action. You know, my teacher, Ann Bogart, said we only have one choice at any given moment, which is to connect or not to connect. When we distance ourselves from the action that we can take politically in our lives, we become disconnected. And so love is an act of connecting and connecting the dots. When we are connected to the things that are happening around us, sure, it's not what we want to do. We don't want to leave the house. We don't want to leave the comfort and safety of our families and homes. But when you see things being threatened, you have to move forward. And so, you know, when I talk about the motivation for all these projects, sure, outrage is there. And the call to justice is there. But also, I think that it's always about love, right? When you're cooking, it's a secret ingredient, right? So, you know, when we're cooking our activism, when we're cooking our movies, that's got to be the primary ingredient. That's got to be the primary motivation. And if you're joining a movement, and as I hope everyone in the Delaware River Basin does against the oil industry, love is what's going to keep you going. Like if I decided to be an organizer, I would have quit in 3 weeks because I am super disorganized person. I can't organize a sock drawer. But if I started making movies in service of this, then I can do it forever. This time right now, especially when we have so much hate all around us, so much division, so much racism, xenophobia. Yeah. This is that moment where we have to have love.
Now, when we spoke the other day, you said something really important. Activism doesn't stop when we get our own stuff done. The title, The Welcome Table, evokes a sense of inclusion and belonging. Yeah. Who did you hope would feel welcome at the table, and who's been left out?
Everybody's invited. The Welcome Table is about how we have to welcome those in harm's way. When I started studying climate change, I realized that one out of every three people on the planet is forecast to lose their homes. That's floods, that's fires, that's famine. That's all the things that can disrupt the flow of life because of climate change. And there are many, many, many of them. The IPCC says there's 127 different impacts. And believe it or not, we go through all of them in the film, very, very rapid fire. That can cause displacement. And that's happening already. We're seeing millions of climate refugees. The fact that we are building a wall and we're funding this new Gestapo called ICE and descending America into this new fascism just to punish people who are seeking aid and help. Look, America is a country of immigrants. It's a country of migrants. We are all migrants. And the bottom line is that we have to understand and appreciate the fact that this system is creating an incredible hardship for people all across the world, and they're going to be forced to move. We're not immune from this in the upper Delaware, by the way. We're seeing climate change-induced infernos in upstate New York. We're certainly seeing them north of us in Canada. This could happen to us. We have to get really, really good at welcoming people if we're in the position of having a safe place, because it's very, very likely, one out of every three, that we are potentially going to lose our homes ourselves and be in the position where we have to find homes somewhere else. And we would hope to be welcomed to those places, right? So this is a call to our own humanity. And the table is the opposite of the wall. A table is a symbol of togetherness, of mutual aid, of collaboration, of sitting together, of a place where we can gather, a symbol of home. And a wall is the opposite. A wall is a place where we push people away. We say, we don't like you. We don't want you. And when anybody sees that border wall or this idea of the wall, I'd like people to picture this table as the alternative where we can sit together and be together and be our true selves and do that collaborative process where we help each other move into the future.
Let's take a quick break here, Josh. And when we get back, I want to talk more about climate refugees and where is home. You've been listening to Catskill Character with today's guest, Milanville's own Josh Fox. This is Radio Catskill. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we're chasing smoke. We're talking about live fire grilling across the Middle East. We've got Tennessee pitmaster Pat Martin talking about saving his beloved style of whole hog. And cookout etiquette with the hosts of the podcast, Were You Raised by Wolves? It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
Tom Candelli here from Curtain Call. Question for you. What do improvisational comedy, novel writing, memoir storytelling, radio, and Thornton Wilder's Our Town have in common? More than you might think. This week on Curtain Call, I'll be joined by Greg Triggs, performer, writer, director, and the MC and co-producer of Broadway's next hit musical. Join us as we explore the many ways stories bring people together. That's this week on Curtain Call, Monday evening at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm Donna Fellenberg with today's guest, filmmaker, activist, and one of my heroes, Josh Fox. In the first half of the show, we went back to the beginning and spoke a bit about the Gasland trilogy, starting with Gasland. We looked at love as a political, spiritual, and communal force and an enduring source of change. We began to look at how Josh's new film, The Welcome Table, just released by HBO, evokes a sense of inclusion and belonging, and how there are still those who are left out of the conversation. Let's get back to our discussion about The Welcome Table. The image of the table is so strong, and you often said when we spoke, instead of a wall, we need a table. Let's just talk a little bit more about that.
Well, I just want to say it's great to be back on WJFF. You know, the table is that symbol of where we can gather, because everybody can feel it. We see smoke blanketing our atmosphere. I don't call this wildfire smoke. These are not wildfires. Wildfires are a thing of the past. These are climate change infernos. Those old terms are from the 20th century. We're living on a different planet, a climate change planet, a planet that's very, very unlike any place that human beings have ever lived for the last 10,000 years. And that means things are going to change. And the question is, where is home? Where is home when so many people are on the move and so many people have been forced off of their homes, when we're living in this new, very, very different world? Home is stability. Home is where you want to be. Where is home in a planet that doesn't afford you that basic stability? And that is the question of the film. And so I go all over the world, from climate change fires in the United States to floods in the south of the United States to Brazil, where there are these horrific landslides, where they had more rain in one night than they should have gotten in a whole year, to Africa, where there's famine, where there's drought, to Italy, where refugees are coming to the southern shores of Italy, to Australia, where there's floods and fires at the same time, and climate gentrification happening, where people are being expelled from their own lands because there's a chance to do that in the middle of the emergency. And this film is really a comprehensive look across the world of people who are being displaced. We take all those folks and invited them to a single table in New Orleans, the site of probably our first major climate displacement in America, the levee failure after Hurricane Katrina. And we all sit at a table up on the levee, and that's sort of the spine of the film. And then at the end of the film, spoiler alert, we build that table 1,000 feet long, and we invited the entire city of New Orleans. And it's this raucous, incredible celebration of solidarity and singing. And the welcome table is a song. It's an old, old song from the South. John Boutte, one of the greatest singers in New Orleans, sings that song at the beginning of the film to a long empty table. And then at the end, there's 1,000 people singing along with him. And this long table is that symbol. What is the opposite of a wall? A wall on its side can be a table. The table where we all can meet together, whether that's in real time or in our minds, metaphorically, that is where home has to be. Home is where we have a strong community, because there's no geographical answer to where am I going to be safe with climate change. People ask me all the time, oh my God, where is the safest place for me to be in the climate emergency? Where do I avoid the fires? Well, the truth is, you're not going to avoid them. Our children are not going to avoid them. They're going to happen. And there's no geographical answer for where is it going to be better to be, because we're seeing these impacts everywhere. Where are we going to be safe? Wherever we have a strong community, wherever we can love our neighbors, wherever we have mutual aid in place. So this is a call to community and action to work together. Right now, our civilization and our society is defined by the greediest hoarders called billionaires on this planet. Elon Musk doing Nazi salutes. Oh, give this guy $1 trillion. These are the people who are defining this era. But we have to look to the future and say, do you want to be a sharer? Or do you want to be a hoarder? Do you want to be generous, or do you want to be greedy? Do you want to be racist and evil and build your own private army of drones and robots to keep out your neighbors? Or do we want to sit together, work together, and redefine reality as this moment of collective joy? And we know a lot about that in the Upper Delaware. We know the joy of working together against the fracking industry and celebrating that victory. We know what it is to be a community. So where are we going to be safe? Wherever we have that collective vision of the future, that means we provide for each other, that we have mutual aid. And that's what this film is about. You know, when I talked earlier about drama and comedy, you know, love is the concern of this film. This film is not a tragedy. Most climate films are a tragedy. This film is a comedy. The comedy is defined by people getting married at the end. There's no actual marriage in the film, but it is a symbolic marriage of our hearts and minds that bring us together. This is a happy ending, even though it exposes and talks about some of the most grave climate impacts that are on their way. And gives a very realistic and grim portrait of what's coming in terms of climate change. But it is a comedy because we do get together at the end of the movie. And that is what I want people to think about. How are we going to experience that collective willpower and that love, which is an action, which is what justice looks like in public.
That was a lot to digest.
I said it the other way around. It's that justice is what love looks like in public.
Okay.
How do we find that justice?
What conversations do you hope people have after they see The Welcome Table?
You know, we have a screening guide at our website. We're encouraging people to watch the film together in groups. Like if you have HBO, invite all your friends over and let's do a group screening. You know, the conversations that people should have is, how do we fight back against climate change? How do we think about providing for the future? You know, climate change fight is political. This is not about changing your light bulb. This is not about buying an electric car. This is not about getting solar panels. All those things individually are a drop in the bucket. We need all of our transportation decarbonized. We need all of our power decarbonized. The only way to do that is a political solution that people demand. And I read a study the other day that just came out that said the top 10% of people, money-wise, in the world are those responsible for climate change. 90% of people on the planet are not the ones who are driving climate change. It's the top 10%. Well, what that means, this is a struggle about economic inequality, not just in the United States, but worldwide. So what do you do to fight climate change? You take on the billionaire class. You take on economic inequality. You do what has been happening all across this country, which is elect people like Zoran Mamdani and Bernie Sanders and AOC, the people who believe in democratic socialism. That is actually the solution to climate change. The solution to climate change is not, oh, I'm decarbonized my home. I want to put this very clearly. That is a great thing to do. But the real struggle is political, and it always has been. If we don't stop climate change, all the things that we won when we beat back fracking are going away.
Just one second. I think it would be really good if you would define for the listener, because some people just don't understand, what is a democratic socialist?
Oh, boy. First, I have to explain love. Now I have to explain socialism.
You have three minutes.
We're 3 minutes. Okay. Well, there's great socialist institutions that we have in this world. One of them is the fire department, libraries. These are things that are in the public trust, right? It doesn't mean that you can't go out there and make a lot of money and get rich. What it means is that we have a basic social safety net so that nobody falls below a certain level. You know, it's like the minimum wage. That's a socialist institution, right? We're talking about sharing wealth. You know what's a great social institution that nobody talks about?
What?
The NBA. The NBA has to redistribute the profits of the most profitable teams to the least profitable teams. And the NBA works really well as socialism. So what we're talking about here, we have a minimum wage. We should have a maximum wage. We shouldn't have billionaires. That's too much power and wealth for one person. We should have a social safety net for people so that we have universal health care, that we don't have to be paying these rapacious insurance companies that never actually get the job done. We should have great education for our people. We should have infrastructure and resources. We should have a Green New Deal, which is basically to say that we can use the power of the wind and the sun, which we know can actually power everything on the planet. Socialism is the idea that we are social animals and that we should provide for each other, and that those of us who are doing the best also have to redistribute some of that wealth back down to those who are not doing as well. And that is exactly how the NBA functions, right? When the Knicks do really well, they're paying money into a big collective pool, and that goes to the Nets, and it goes to the Wizards, and it goes to all the bottom of the barrel teams. And that's a great, great system. That is a system that we could employ at a much higher level. And the truth of the matter is, there's no way to earn $1 billion. You only get $1 billion by exploiting people, exploiting wages, hoarding wealth at the top, which is what this system is designed to do. This capitalist system is designed to drain wealth all the way upward so that fewer and fewer people have more and more, and more people have less and less. Socialism is just the opposite of that. It doesn't mean that you can't become wealthy and have a great life. It means that no one is impoverished. It means that the basics of our civilization are covered. And that is going to be increasingly important, especially as we're seeing AI make everybody jobless, including, by the way, probably some filmmakers. But the bottom line is that, you know, sharing is a better idea for the future when we're talking about the climate catastrophe that is here and that is going to get worse. It is better for us to have strong communities. That is what socialism means to me. And of course, you know, in practice, we're seeing here in New York City, where I am right now, universal childcare being passed by the city. We're seeing the mayor hiring local people to fill the potholes on the streets for $30 an hour. And boom, those jobs got snapped up right away and all the potholes got filled. A lot of it's just common sense. And so when we talk about democratic socialism, we're not talking about Soviet Union and communism and China. We're not talking about a Politburo that dictates all policy in life. We're talking about a democracy and that socialism is a fundamental part of democracy. It's also a fundamental part of what started democracy, which was the longhouses of the Onondaga Nation in upstate New York. That's where George Washington learned about democracy. It has to do with self-determination, but it has to do with us having a different principle than every man or woman for themselves. It has to do with caring for the community around us, which I think that is in the teachings of almost every major religion. That is at the core of any moral philosophy. And somehow in our economic system, we've decided that it's okay to just abuse people and, you know, winner take all and extract resources, despoil places. That is the economy that has to end. We have to move forward together. And, you know, I would encourage people to really look at what Bernie Sanders is saying, what AOC is saying, what people like Jerome Amdani are saying. I don't agree with everything he has to say. But, you know, the bottom line is that if you think about where this system is going with somebody like Elon Musk having $1 trillion, that means that in the future, there will be three or four people who have everything and everyone else will have nothing. The opposite would be if everyone has a much more equal share of the basic necessities of life. And that's, I think, what I'm talking about here. And it would be great for people to study that and take a look at it and do your own inquiry. These are not things that I can answer in 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. But thank you so much for trying. I think you did a great job.
This is like a talent show. Explain love in 2 seconds, explain socialism in 3 minutes. No, it's good. I'm trying.
I just want to thank you so much for visiting with me today. I always learn so much from you. And we didn't get a chance to talk about your cooking or your cats. These are two very important
things.
Those are
not as important as socialism and love. The movie is on HBO. I really hope people can go and watch it. It's been very popular. It's been getting amazing reviews. But we're also probably going to do a screening up at the Narrowsburg Union soon. I hope people come to that. We're going to screen all across the country. But yeah, it's on HBO now. Invite your friends over. Host a screening party. Go to our website, thewelcometablefilm.com. Download the screening guide. There's an email there. You can get it. And enjoy and let's think about the future together.
Thank you, Josh. You just did my closing for me. Thank you so much. Less
well,
work
you know,
for me.
I'm taking the socialist approach and taking some of the work on.
Well, just let me say that Catskill Character is on at 11:30 on Saturdays. And I thank you all for listening right here on Radio Catskill. And once again, I thank you, Josh, for joining me today.
Thanks, Donna. It's always a pleasure.
Sit at the welcome table. I want to sit at the welcome table. See that beautiful city one of these days. Oh, one of these days.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Bank, a community bank serving Sullivan County and beyond for more than a century. Rooted in local relationships and growing with our customers, Jeff Bank offers full service personal and business banking with a commitment to service. Jeff.Bank. Member FDIC. From generous funding from the Public Media Bridge Fund. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Shane Torres welcomed the news that wrinkles are now back in style.
In about 15 years, I'm going to look like a bull mastiff, so I'll be doing great.
I'm Peter Sagal. Being completely unseen because we're on the radio will never go out of style. Join us for this week's show with ageless superstar Sally Field. That's this week's News Quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
This week on Selected Shorts, T.C. Boyle's frame-by-frame send-up of the classic television show about Lassie, the collie who just keeps rescuing you no matter what stupid thing you've done. Come with me, Meg Wolitzer.
Selected Shorts, Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.